keeps, every once in a while he'll write and says, well, I'm going to get out that way. I'll see you. And he never does.
I think he's going to get out here.
The last time, wasn't because when he went to Canada, he wrote me from there a couple of times. He's back, what, in Nova Scotia, wasn't he, for a while?
I think so. Now he's down in Carolina, South Carolina. No,
last time I heard from him, Washington, D.C.
Yeah, he did a study of the firemen in Washington, D.C. You should, if you're interested at all in that, he's got a book he wrote on it. Mm-hmm. It's called Good Fire, Bad Night. And it's, you know, it's kind of a neat story of the, you know, he covers the busiest firehouses, the, you know, just how all the, you know, the men like it.
This guy used to be an ex-jumper?
Yeah, he used to jump here.
Huh. That's where I met Nick and all that.
Well, he's a friend of Venom's who Nick lived with.
Oh, I see.
And blah, down the lines. Well, I understand you jumped for quite a while.
Yeah, I made my first one in 1945.
Really?
Yeah.
Was that up at Winthrop?
No, Missoula. Everything was, all training until 1947 was done at Missoula. All smoke jumpers were trained at Missoula. Then I went to McCall, and I was there just that year. Then I skipped 46, and then I started in 47.
At Winthrop?
Yes.
And then you came to Redmond. Did you come down here to start Redmond?
Yes. Well, yes. In fact, we slept on the sewing room floor when we got here. They didn't have a bunkhouse quite finished. And
wow.
Yeah, so down here on the... Yeah.
Well, what was the purpose? Why did they start Redmond down here? What Winthrop and Cave and LeGrand were already here? And
that's actually a good credit. I think they had a little extra money. That was when they had this federal funds for contractors for hiring. I don't know how it was. There was some deal they had for a few years, like the federal government does, and so they decided. But I honestly don't know why they. The only thing is they had to send them from. They brought in. They worked out of here a lot anyway. See, they'd bring a plane load of K Junction guys in and sleep on in a hotel or sleep out on the deal there. And so they used this place quite a bit. And I think the Deschutes, these forests in here, wanted it pretty bad because they're just too far from CJ Winthrop to fly. I mean, because our airplanes were pretty slow then. Still are, but.
I asked the guy down in Bend, the like PR guy from the forest, and he said because it was centrally located and because they had a history of fires around here, more or less what you just said, you know. So they decided to stick it out.
There's always an argument on centralization and non-centralization.
Yeah, right.
There are advantages to both ways, you know.
Especially nowadays, huh?
Because, I mean. Well, when they got, you know, if they had. Could have had a good jump airplane that was fast, then centralized like here would be almost perfect. But a good jump plane is not fast. Those ones I've used, as far as I'm concerned, have been lousy planes. In fact, the finest jump plane ever made is that one right out there.
The Otter.
The next one is a Ford dry motor.
Really? You didn't like the ones in, you don't like the King Air, the 200?
No.
Or?
They're too fast.
Yeah.
It depends a lot on the pilot, but they're just too fast. They're moving, and they don't have the... you know, these ones with big thick wings on them and all that can poke along, and the jumper just falls out instead of getting whipped around all over the place. And
well, yeah, we jumped on Saturday on the Deschutes, and we had two man exits out of the 99, and the second man couldn't get out. Mm-hmm.
I hate that 99. I hate it. But boy, to get from point A to point B.
They zip down here from
great.
From North Cascades, yeah.
And, see, the Ford Triangle, that was the trouble with it. Then they had, like Missoula used them, they had these little landing strips, you know, all through their primitive areas. At that time, they were primitive areas rather than wilderness. And so they put a few jumpers here and a few here, and so it didn't have to go very far because, hell, top speed, it cruised at about, I don't know, 85 or something like that.
Oh, and then when they feathered the props to slow down, it was...
Well, the Trimotor had wings about twice as thick as that.
Oh, yeah?
Water. That thing, you just flop, go noisy. They were metal, and they vibrated a lot.
Huh.
My first airplane ride was my first jump, too, and it was out of the Trimotor. Well, the two engines are hung with on the ends and the struts, and the engine would go like this. And you know, I was watching that. I was almost more afraid of the airplane than I was the jump. Wobbled.
Did you use the same kind of deployment, or was there more of a shock when you started?
Oh, no, there was a shock. That was the worst part of jumping, was a shock. That's the reason you like slow airplanes rather than fast. Because, well, it was just accordion folded and then cover put on it. So when the cover came off, the wind just caught the...
The static line?
The static line pulled the cover off. Well, then, although theoretically it'd string it out, but at the same time the wind would catch it and just fly out. So a lot of times, see, it would open before you were into your lines. Get out and kind of flare, and here you're still going down. And then when you hit the end of the lines, why?
Just wham! Right?
Yeah, I mean, it varied a lot. If the sheet was a little slower opening, it wasn't too bad. If it were, otherwise, they just strawberries from one end to the other on you, just red marks. You used to teach you to hold your teeth together so you wouldn't get your tongue, you know. And as I go out, I say, God, and I'd grip my teeth and then bang, and I damn. So that's the reason we like slow airplanes. For one, in the DC-3, see, it's pretty fast. Depends a lot on the pilot. God, we used to get some horrible shocks on that. Just the chute literally kind of fold up and reopen again. So the deployment bag was real great. See, that lets you clear at the end of your lines before the canopy ever comes out. Mm-hmm. So it opens, so there's no way you can get much of a shock on that. But if your canopy comes open before you're at the end of your lines the other way, well, it just depended a lot. Sometimes it's hard, sometimes you've got very little. But we used to lose helmets every once in a while. They just bang, pop off. I had a helmet one time. I looked over to my partner, and his helmet just left his head. Just went singing off in the...
Would your risers pull your helmet off? Or?
No, just the impact. I mean, just
Wow.
Snap!
Jeez.
See, you tucked under. You really tucked under.
So you could get a whiplash if you didn't tuck it.
And the helmets, you know, if you'd really...
Had football
helmets. Tight on. Yeah, very simple, yes.
Yeah.
No, the jump... The suit and all that, that's one of the few things that hasn't changed. Basically, that hasn't changed a bit since the first experimental work. It's the same thing. Different materials. Then they were made of canvas. They used black felt for padding.
And what was the outside of the suit made of?
Canvas.
Heavy canvas.
And, well, during the war and right after the war, zippers are hard to get, so they used hooked... You know, close it. But they went back to zippers, and before, the original one had zippers. They did experiment a little with a one-piece suit, but the bad feature of that is you need too many sizes.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it'd be better yet. You'd get in a lot faster, see?
Right.
But you need about 8 or 10 sizes, whereas this two-piece, well, you can get by with basically 3 sizes. And but they never played around with it much. The collar was the same. I mean, like I said, padded a little different. The mask, I bet that mask on there is the same specification it was in 1939.
Who was responsible for the change of the D-bag? Was that a smoke jumper innovation, or who worked on that? Did you guys put in suggestions or anything like that? Or
no, it was done by... well, Missoula had an experiment... what did they call that?
MEDC or whatever. That's
and they worked with it, and I think that the military had already gone to it. And
Before you had the deployment bag, was it a deal where you jumped out and pulled the ripcord, or did they always have a static line?
Well, except the experimental work, the very first.
They
didn't have a static line, but in fact, they had the static line before the military really had one. Our old static lines used to just be a regular hook. You know, the military developed that sliding deal. And guys miss every once in a while or bounce off the hook. Once it's been done. Well, the old tri-motor had a little... You could jump up to 4 out of whack. Generally, it was only 2.
Are you kidding? God.
But if you were the fourth man, you couldn't hook up. And I was fourth... Two times I was fourth man out of the tri-motor, you know. So you got all ready, it's a little short cable about that right next to the door, and you just couldn't reach it, the fourth man. So the first guy goes out, second guy, and as you come up, well, you slap it on and then going out, you know.
Was it a stand-up exit?
No, they're too small. It was kind of a hunched over. No, it had a step.
Uh-huh.
You had to come down onto the step on it, because it was just... But it was, God, it was slow. So it made it nice for jumping compared... Then the Traveler, that was the two planes when we began. Those were the two jump planes. They were single engine, carried two jumpers.
So they had that would be just when you got a call for just a small amount of men, you'd take that out?
Well, see, those days they'd request so many men, that's what you took. You never took more than that.
Uh-huh.
They requested two men. Even when we had the Nordyne that carried four, when they requested two men, that's all we even put in the airplane.
So did you ever get, when you went on a two men, or did you ever get on one that just, I mean, I could see two men when they call you, but by the time you get there, it could just be
Yeah, it could be. And it wasn't a while. It was a little big. So
yeah.
We'd go back and get some more. But see, for years, that's all we had up there is Nordyne. One Nordyne.
Why did they go to different planes?
Get them cheap, surplus.
And they quit making the Trimotor, I guess.
They quit that. They didn't make that many. In fact, I think there was only 8 or 9 in existence at that time.
Huh.
See, the chief test pilot for Ford was killed in an airplane crash. And Ford just gave up on airplanes like that. So they only made them for about 2 or 3 years. And somebody just killed his interest in it all, and he just dropped the whole project. That's the way I understand it, anyway.
I guess that's a good enough reason.
I'm not sure whether he was killed in a Trimotor or not, either, but he was killed in an airplane.
They were supposed to be pretty good planes, weren't they, the Trimotors?
I like the looks of them, man. We've seen some old slides.
They put them in little dinky holes that you wouldn't believe. They fly just about like an Otter, except they won't go as fast as the Otter. Otter will, 140 knots, 30 knots, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Which isn't exactly high speed, but it's a lot faster than a Trimotor.
How did you hear about smoke jumping? Or how did you get into it?
Okay. I was young and all that in those days, and I was raised as a Quaker, and I was a conscientious objector during the war. And that's who did all the jumping in 43, 44, and 45.
Oh, I
see.
All
conscientious objectors. In fact, there's 200 of them in 45 that were jumping all over the country. That's how I got started there.
Oh, okay. And so you went over to Missoula.
Yeah.
From.
Yeah. Then when I tried to get back in 47, this Francis Lufkin's the only one that hired ex-COs.
He was the only one who would?
No, the others would touch you with a 10-foot pole.
apparently he had must have worked with some during the war and liked their work then, or?
Oh, yeah, I think they all liked the work, but it was just kind of a policy. You know, he just said that, you know, the Forest Service, and he just ignored it and hired him anyway.
Well, yeah, he was powerful enough to just do what he wanted, wasn't he?
Pretty much so.
So why do you think that was so, that people wouldn't hire COs?
Same way they wouldn't hire blacks.
Really?
Or
discriminate.
Chinese?
Really?
They just discriminate against. Just discriminate.
That's pretty sorry.
I mean, that's fine. I mean, you expected to see that part, but because there were guys that got back on with the Forest Service, right? Some district ranger liked their work or something. See, just like now, more so than now, you worked on other projects, you know, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a few guys who got on this, well, they'd be FMO and that FMOs now, I guess, then they call it this type of thing on some districts in Montana. But
did you say 43 to 45 you were jumping out of Missoula?
No, just 45. And I jumped out of I trained in Missoula and jumped out of McCall.
Oh, okay.
So, let's see. When you were jumping, did you still have rookie training like we have now?
Oh, yes. In Missoula, you had fairly large groups, so actually what happened is it took longer to train you because one day they divided the group in two parts. Say there was 50, I think there was 53 or 4, an A, B unit type deal. And one day you'd have fire training, one group, and the other group would have jump training. And the next day, they'd have jump training, and you'd have fire training. And you alternated like that. Even when you were jumping, you only jumped every other day when you're training, because you jumped one day and fire training the next day, and so on.
So it sounds like there wasn't as much prerequisites then as far as fire training?
Oh, no. No, in fact, Luffy liked to hire farm boys, but they're really strong and all this, and he could care less. He says, I'm training the way I want them, this way.
Yeah.
There used to be none of that. Plus, the training was kind of a hassle like it is now, but you're not supposed to say this, but the training is much tougher now than it was then.
Oh,
you
really?
Say the old days, it was really tough, you know. But it, I mean, it was tough, but it wasn't. You didn't have any specifications to.
Oh, like running the mile and all that.
Yeah, or so many push-ups. Or, God, we had one good jumper one time. Couldn't do a pull-up. Never could. He just built up. He'd do a million push-ups. He couldn't even jump down yet. He'd carry a big load and everything else. But he, some way he was made, he might work his way up to get one, but that's all. And he'd work and work at it, you know. And he just, the way he was built, I guess, he's a fairly good-sized person, too. He jumped for several years. Did fine. But anyway, they had nothing. In fact, in my rookie training at Mizzou, all I wanted to do is improve. If you could do five push-ups all, well, then my God, I better keep trying. And if your attitude is right, and then pretty soon you're doing 10 and 12 and 15 and so on, great. But if you could do 50 to start with, by God, you'd better do more now. And then,
yeah. Well.
But anyway, it just wasn't. It really wasn't as tough.
How long did it go for?
About the same as it does now.
4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah, and it's every other day, I think. I'm trying to remember. Didn't start till pretty late, some in June, to 4th. It was about the. It was about 4 weeks.
I understand that running wasn't emphasized as much then. Is that, or did you guys do a lot of running, or?
Did a lot of hiking. They'd take us out in dinghies and put a pack on our back, and we had to walk up to the lookout or something like that. Although sometimes, they had squad leaders, but each squad leader had his squad, and he'd stayed with them all during the training.
Oh, I see.
You had your own. Well, we had a guy that wasn't too ambitious. Squad leader anyway, and one time I know we were supposed to take some long hike, and we went out about a half a mile in a dinghy somewhere, and he said, "Let's rest." And we rested for about 5 hours or however long it took. Got up and put some dirt on us and stuff. So we were, you know, just ordinary boys,
sure.
Really boys. But they had to jump, of course, the jump tower, and of course it was just a plain old rope. And
It was just
dope all the time, but just a manila rope and a tower, and you jumped, and when it came to halt, you did too.
So there was no cables to slide on. It was a shock tower.
Just to try to get, yeah, it was because that's the shock you were going to get, you know. And you had to. They had kind of a net under, but actually, in the rope, I saw it break about 3 or 4 times. Usually, it broke, so you bring the guy to stop, and then it'd break, and it just kind of. Then you just fall down. Nobody seemed to worry about it anyway.
Well, you guys were tough
anyway.
Back then. You didn't need to be worried about
it. Well, that part of it was, I mean, jumping off those was a lot rougher. Then we went to nylon rope. Well, that was almost too easy. That has so much stretch to it, you know. But in the middle, they had a kind of a spring that you could adjust, you know. But they had that, so it came pretty hard, and you had to. I don't know whether they do it. Well, I don't think they do it here. In order to be keeping your head while you took like a rock or something, and when you went off, well, then you're supposed to, two rocks, and then change hands back forward before you hit the bottom, you know.
That's a good idea, though.
What was that to do? Just give you something to think about while you were up there?
Psychologically, I don't know how to explain this. In the old days, jumping was much more of an unknown than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
The fear of jumping is, guys were much more afraid, including myself, on your first jumps, and even than they are now, because everybody jumps. You know, it's done all over the place, and then everybody's raised with it. But then you weren't. It was a daring do, you know. People, these divers and the air shows, you know, and all that, and of course paratroopers were just getting started then too, and so it's kind of an unknown, so guys would freeze sometimes in the air, and this was to get a guy, like, his mind going, even though he's doing something, even, you know, jumping at the same time and able to do it. No, I saw one fella myself, I mean, it happened. He jumped and he's like this, you know, and he shoot open and he went all the way to the ground just like this, just froze.
Jeez. Did he ever jump again?
I'm trying to remember on him. I don't think he made it.
Was that during training or was that during...
During training.
Yeah.
Oh, it's, you know, that's... But, you know, just people petrified by it. Now they are. Now, those guys don't even faze them. And it always did scare me to a certain extent. I mean, I was nervous anyway.
Well, your shoots were... it was tougher with those shoots, wasn't it? Compared to the shoots we have now.
Well, they were smaller, of course. We came down like a bag of crap.
Well, and which shoots did you use?
They were 28 foot, and they... Okay, the Risen had the old Eagle shoot, if you've ever heard of it.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I've seen pictures of Lufkin and the Eagle Man.
Okay, I jumped once, but most guys didn't want to jump, even though they were going out. Okay, they steered very well, and forward speed and all that was probably... it's better than the FS5, I'd say. It might not be as well as
the 10.
What do you call your now 10s?
Right.
But you talk about opening shock. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. Okay, it had this porch around it, this second piece, you know. If you ever notice, here's the parachute, and then another piece was sewed on, so when it opened, it had a deal. It went all the way around, about this wide, and sewed up here and there.
Okay.
Okay, so the chute opened this way, rather than filling up in the inside of it, open from the outside. And when those things open, the shock was something else. That's those poor guys, that some of them jumping all the time, mainly because of the steerability. Okay, these are two things I saw with my own eyes. One, the opening shock broke five lines on this parachute. They weren't bad lines. And a lot of times they opened twice. They made a bang, got it, bang, when they opened. And sometimes they opened hard enough, they'd fold up and then come bang, and hit again. Okay, on a fire jump I made, this one guy, he always wanted to jump him. And he jumped and he had one of those horrible opening shocks and it broke the strap under his leg. It snapped that off, snapped his suspenders. But of course, his harness kept his suit on. All his legs was flopping in the breeze, you know. Just
amazing.
So they split holes in them all the time from the opening shock. So they're kind of bad that way.
Split holes in the chute itself.
Yeah,
I mean?
It was silk. Okay, silk.
Oh right.
Either.
Right.
And so anyway, the first chutes we used, we just had slots in them. Didn't even have the tails on them at all. So you turn them and you... Psychologically, they went forward, but they didn't very much.
You
at least
they
could turn them.
You
come in the way you
sort
want.
Sort of thought they went forward.
Well, they wouldn't a little bit when they put this. We call it a porch, on it.
Which is the holes in?
No. Okay. Well, you have the FS5s here yet, haven't you? Or some.
We don't use them.
I know,
but there's some around. Yeah.
Well, you've seen that back end where they put the extra triangular piece in and it rides up higher.
Okay.
And pushes air out there, and that helped a lot, but the other parachutes didn't. Looking back on it, we thought they had 2 or 3 miles an hour, but I don't think they did.
So then you couldn't counter any wind with those?
Really.
Was it important for you? Did you even try to land into the wind, or I guess it didn't make much difference then? You could just land any way you wanted?
No, I landed always. Most comfortable way to roll.
Uh-huh.
I always did, which happened to be on the right side. I always roll to the right. I can't roll to the left, or at least I never did.
Did you use Allen rolls then? Or?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Did you find that was easy to do? I mean, it looks like a really hard roll to me. I've just learned the other one. I never did.
Well, to do it perfect is almost impossible. Number one, it's hard to train because you don't have the forward speed, which
uh-huh.
you have the winds.
Uh-huh.
But the whole idea is to get you off your feet.
Right.
And like I say, you landed a lot harder in these newer chutes anyway, and they had to figure out some deal to get you off your feet. And when they try to use a military, which is kind of folding coming over here, too many guys banged up their shoulders because they wouldn't get it tucked under enough. And this Allen roll would... You know, once you get turned like that, well, then nature take care of the rest. You're off your feet, and well, you
yeah.
got your butt or shoulder, who cares?
Yeah, you got enough padding on.
Because of,
well, who came up with that Allen roll?
Guy by the name of Allen, I think at Missoula, and he came up with it fairly early in the system, you know. I think, you know, we used to learn it in 45, but I can't remember his first name, but that's, you know, who he was as far as that goes.
Uh-huh. Well, you were talking about some guys like to use that eagle chute. Then you had your choice on what chute you jumped. Is that true? I mean, you could say, give me that one.
Well, there wasn't too many of them left, and some of the old-timers, man, been there 1 or 2 years, usually had them pretty well tied up. But there wasn't that many guys wanted to do it because of the old Minshaw. I did it on a fire jump, and it actually wasn't much harder than I've had with the others, but they varied too some, you know.
Yeah.
I decided, well, they're going out of style, I might as well say I've jumped one of them, so I... They had two sizes. They had a 27-footer and a 30-foot.
And what, the 27-footer is if you wanted to be daring or something?
No, I mean, they just happened to be the two makes that Eagles Parachute Company made, and the lighter guys, generally went to 27, and the heavier ones went to 30. But they disappeared in 40. I don't know whether they used any in 46. 47, they were all gone.
When you did your training... I noticed when I did my training, I thought that it wasn't just to, there was more to it than just seeing if you were physically fit. There was a kind of a test involved in it. Did you?
Well, that's the reason we didn't, you know, a lot of the guys that, in those days, like I say, you had some farm kids that didn't need to be physically fit. The whole idea in smoke jumper training, and I think it still is you do all these things over and over. This is the original reason why. Over and over and over again until you do it by what's the word, rote. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And because, like I say, then in those days we had kind of, a lot of guys had fear. They're just almost mind went blank on them. But if they'd over and over again, they'd hooked up if they'd done this, and then we did it over and over again. It's like you do now, you know, you go off the tower, you do the mock ups over and over and over. That even if your mind goes blank, then the guy's going to do the most of the time do the right thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have to really think about it. And I think that was most of the reason for the training, you know. And then it puts a little bit, or used to, I can't pronounce this right, but it's like the Marines say,
esprit de corps.
Yeah, it's kind of a tongue twister. and you, especially you go through kind of rough training, it does put some of that in you. In those days, there was a lot of course, among jumpers, because again, it was unusual. There wasn't that many of them around, and it was new, and people respected you, especially when you're a CO, you know. Not anybody to jump out of an airplane can't be a cowardly. And so our relationship with people, townspeople, and all that was really good.
How did you get into? I mean, you said you were a CO, and did somebody suggest that to you, or did you research it, or
no? You knew where. Well, it was like any unit. You had the you had these camps called CPS camps. Well, a bunch of veterans were. They were all over the country, and like jobs here and there. You had what they call, like, a lot of them worked in mental institutions. I was in a guinea pig experiment one time in North Carolina.
In North Carolina, I went to school down there. Where were you?
Pinehurst, the middle of the summer, isolated in one room for 8 weeks.
Really?
Oh, God.
God, was it hot. Jesus.
That was the experiment.
No, it was a typical pneumonia. They tried to give us pneumonia. And a typical pneumonia is a name of a pneumonia, and it was a fairly non-deadly pneumonia, but it was raising. Came with the troops and stuff, was very contagious, and they weren't even sure what caused it, whether it was a virus or bacteria.
So they wanted to get you guys sick so they could figure out how to get you.
Well, yeah, you had control. You had a control group.
Oh,
and then
I
you
see.
Had one that had been filtered, the bacteria had been filtered out of it, and then one with the whole works, you know. Turned out it was bacteria. The first experiment, they tried, I'm kind of off the subject here. Few guys got it that was in a control group, so they had to tighten down the isolation and do it all over again.
How long did you jump? From, you said 45, then you...
Skipped 46.